Welcome back, Knuckleheads. My guest this week is doing some awesome things in the coffee and co-working space. Riley Kiltz is the co-founder and CEO of Craftworks Coffee here in Fort Worth and Austin. If you haven't ever stopped by and tried what they're doing, you should go check it out. Before we get started, leave a rating, please, and share with a friend. Enjoy. All right, Riley, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Matt. Excited to be here.
You are the second SIGEP, and so I had Will on this summer.
Oh, awesome.
And now you. So let's jump right on in. So you guys run, you're big into conscious capitalism. Mm-hmm. I would love to start there and kind of what led you to do what you're doing now.
Yeah, it's somewhat of a long journey to like where we're at now in my interpretation of what conscious capitalism is. But I think that it started actually when I was at TCU. I was in the business school and trying to figure out where I wanted to apply myself. And it was right around the time when microfinance was becoming really popular and just all the social movements from Tom's Shoes and things like that were starting to emerge. And I really wanted to do a deep dive in that. And so I decided to write my thesis on investment theories and how to invest while also doing good in the world. And so it was like somewhat popular, but it also just like, I felt this kind of like importance within myself to use my gifts and my abilities to try to make an impact. I don't know. I was young and very naive. And so as I explored the different ways to go about it, from SKS Microfinance, trying to take a typically nonprofit model and turn it into something that can be monetized in the capital markets from a public way. I think they went public in India and then over time self-destructed. And then there's like complete nonprofit versions of it. And then my keystone kind of case locally was Satori Capital. And so got to talk with a few of the members of their team and understand how do they consider stakeholders in their investment decisions? And then how does that impact reduction of risk, being able to recognize opportunity? And I really gravitated towards that holistic model of investing and how when you do consider the whole, it allows you to have the opportunity to not just outperform the competition, but also be in a place where you look at your work at the end of the day and it feels like it was worthwhile. I don't know how much like you want me to go through my progression, but in short, I went to the Blackstone Group and tried to apply that framework in an international real estate environment. And
how'd that go?
I think you have to like, when you're in a big organization, you have to like celebrate the small wins. And so from a macro perspective, I don't think it went well. I mean, without divulging too much information, yeah. Like there's investing in an international environment is just super messy because there's just a history of exploitation and a lot of tension between foreign direct investment and local partners. And so we had some great examples of local partners. Our partners in Argentina were awesome. And I really focused on, because I couldn't influence like where capital was going other than voicing up as an analyst, I really focused on what does it look like from a stakeholder perspective to care for our partners on the ground. Those were relationships that I had the opportunity to kind of impact. And so I tried to make space and time to, it's like seems so basic, but like when you show them value, then I think it's easier to come to the table with like a unity. And so I try to do that through taking long, like I don't like to eat lunch, like distracts from the workday. So I'd take like long lunches with some of our Brazilian partners, which usually involved lunch and then a walk through the mall. It was just like a safe place to like,
so random,
or just in my times of going down there individually, I'd make time in the evening to talk with other analysts and just kind of ask them questions that I thought were like on my mind and heart as I was thinking about how the capital that we're investing in their country and in their community is impacting and how do we consider the stakeholders that are there. So I feel like it was happening, or at least I believed it was happening, but macro in the same way that like Satori does it is it was not happening.
So that would probably be very difficult to do. So how did you land on starting a coffee shop?
So that was kind of like the weird pivot that I made. Was I think that like entrepreneurship for me is just the some people are really good at kind of like constantly seeing trends. I literally feel like I had one idea, and it was to solve like my own pain point. It's a really common theme as you see people who experience something and then they want to solve it for everyone. And so mine was sweet offices and a bad experience at a Regis office space. And it was a practical need. It wasn't anything that Regis was doing. It was this like more interpersonal, emotional need that I had. Which it's kind of funny. I'm talking about like my heart and my emotions. And I think that everyone who knows me well, it's like, those are hard things to tap in, but they like are really strong forces like within me. I'm not like an expressive or emotional person on the outside.
Neither am I.
Anyway, so was going to solve that need. And then I think that really when you have so much momentum from a history of like focusing on conscious capitalism, I didn't think like, oh, how is this like business going to impact the world? But then like you launch and you start and you talk with the customers and you start seeing pain points. And it was like, man, there's a really clear social need that we're solving here. And like the same way that I approached the vendors and our partners in Brazil and Argentina, like I applied to our partners here, like trying to converse with them, understand who they were as people. But that's not scalable. Like your impact's pretty limited just to you. And what I saw at Kraftwerk and people experiencing there was connection is just something that's really deteriorating within our society. And work and coffee are two daily rhythms that we have. I think 65% of coffee drinkers in America who drink on a daily basis, and then we all have to work. And so I think I saw these two rhythms that we had the opportunity to guide our small community. And the need was functional and caffeine and a workspace. But then there's this like the same pain that I had, this like disconnect is what I really tried to focus our team on. Because I think that as we've more technology has been rolling out and we've been in a world that doesn't really know how to connect in physical spaces. I tried to guide our team towards engaging with customers in a certain way. And then over time, what I've learned is the customer engagement is much less of a script and more of like you need to, in order for them to deliver great hospitality and connection to customers and members, what you need to focus on is ensuring that they're connected to each other, because you can't like give to a customer what you don't have internally. So if you're trying to like be connected, it's like, it's either going to be very inauthentic, right? Saying like, here's your script, like say these things and get your job done. And it might make the customer feel like they're connected. But if you demonstrate like to them what connection looks like between, you know, fellow baristas, and then I've seen that have a bigger impact towards intuitive to our employees, how to care for people. And then from that, it starts to like ripple out to where I've seen customers come in who didn't know anyone in the city. And they like write us Christmas cards saying, hey, I'm so grateful for this space. Like I just came here not to feel alone, and your team cared for me. And this is the catalyst for a lot of my community here in Fort Worth, not always our baristas, but just like that kind of rhythm. So again, we're talking about like, what, 5% of customers who like maybe are able, or 1% of customers who articulate that to us. And our belief is just like consistent work in that area will continue to have like those effects, and it's worthwhile work. So in a sense, going back to the original question of conscious capitalism, I think that considering your like each stakeholder in that, so what does it look like if the goal is to make people feel seen and feel connected, then like how do you apply that to every one of your stakeholders? So from how do you make your community feel seen, how do you make your investors feel seen, your employees, your customers, your vendors? So
And did you map that out like very early on, or is that something that just kind of comes with time? I mean, you're a couple years into it, you have a couple locations. What has that experience been like?
I think that early on, there's like a phrase, I think like a really ambitious statement of like to draw people out of isolation and into community. I think that orchestrating that is really difficult. And so we've focused our team more on how do you just make people feel like they're seen and like their needs are seen. And like it's like such a simple statement. But yeah, like,
is that done through training or like how yeah. where do you even start on? I mean, it's a very yeah. ambitious goal to start out with.
Totally.
And you're trying to be financially profitable, things like that yeah. early on. Like,
yeah.
Where do you even start with something like that?
So I think you hire great people to start. Like yeah. you have to find people who just like care about it, right? So then you don't have to handhold them through every element of
yeah, how you can teach them.
Right.
Job.
And then I think that as we've grown bigger though, we need to provide more of a playbook that is they're empowered to use it as they will, still not a script, but kind
almost
of more
guideline.
Of a guide. Yeah. yeah. I think like what I see is like I was talking with Mark, Sarah, the owner of Mark and Carrie, actually we're both in this conversation around like how do you make the employee experience, they're the owners of Melt.
Gotcha.
How do you make the employee experience great? And we talked about like, you really need to like map out kind of like, how do you like not just encourage them to do great things, but like incentivize them, show them that like by like it, you almost like gamify the entire employee experience, which is like what I'm in the process of right now. Of,
okay.
Like, what are the rules of the game? Like, what are the boundaries that you need to like stay within, yeah. right? But you have the whole board to like play with, and what elements can you pull to where it's like everything from, hey, when a kid walks into our space and they're with their parents, like have like stickers ready, like Trader Joe's does that so well. Like, and suddenly like the kid's excited to come into Craftwork because they see seen by our baristas in a space where like, especially coffee shops are not a space where kids feel like.
Makes sense.
Yeah, like welcome typically. And so like map out like all of the opportunities and then put it in the employee's hands to say like, hey, do as you will, right? And like, if you walk out in this, like there's opportunities for growth here. So I think that that's like one of the things that I'm like one of my pet projects right now is like, as we have 35 employees right now, like we have 4 locations, and across those locations, like trying to get like one standardization, but it's not just top down. Like I'm trying to listen to, hey, people on the ground, like our teammates, like what are you seeing? What are those like magical opportunities? Cause like they do it already. And I'm just trying to like use these stories to inspire like our whole team together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And you're a couple years in, I guess what has been one of the biggest surprises that you did not expect coming from Blackstone? And I mean, obviously you had the grand vision, you mm-hmm. kind of knew where you were headed, but mm-hmm. a couple years in, but
yeah. Yeah, frankly, man, it's probably like the fragility of an operating company is like hilarious to me. That like anyone makes a capital investment in an operating company is mind blowing, because I'm from the real estate world.
Yeah.
You have an underlying asset that like is pretty cut and dry.
Right? Yeah, like, pretty consistent. Yeah,
yeah. Like, and so
you
I think
lease it, it's going to return.
Yeah. And like, even it's like empty building, still valuable. Like it's obviously it's not a good investment, but like you still kind of have these baseline
you can
things.
Touch it. You, yeah,
and
you
I can. Think that when you talk with other operators and us, you kind of like get into the inside and it's like, man, like there's like key people in here is like, if they leave, like our company's not the same, like mm-hmm. because operating companies are so reliant upon the people who are like bringing that experience to the customer. I think that puts the responsibility on us to ensure that we're caring for our team top to bottom. And so I think that 2020 is kind of the year of like just a lot of like internal growth and development in my mind, whereas like the capital that's backed us to date and kind of my focus to date has been like on strategic opportunities. I think that there's been just continual need to focus on just getting the nuts and bolts right in every kind of interaction, in every moment, in the employee experience. So really trying to work on that this year.
Yeah. We can get into the experience some more.
Yeah.
I'm curious, I mean, every day you feel like, or I feel like there's like a new coffee shop.
Yeah.
And Southside. And
totally.
What is the competition like? How do you guys think about it? I mean, does that keep you up at night or mm-hmm. given the co-working
yeah.
Piece of your business, like, does it not concern you?
Yeah. I mean, it's the co-working piece of the business is like a whole other red water that I think is really difficult to compete in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that early on, I felt like I was, again, this is my first venture. And so I didn't really know like what elements you need to be looking for. And so I was like, oh, like dual revenue of coffee and co-working, we can solve this model. Coffee shops are just like hard businesses to operate. And so I think that was the thesis early on. And then like you get huge competition on both ends of the barbell, right? So I think there's several things that we do distinctly well, especially on member care and the way that our team cares for our co-working members. That's like this boutique co-working that like you're not lost in a sea of people at a WeWork. Like you and pretty much have the opportunity to know each of the members in the space, because it's only 30 to 40 relationships that you see on a regular basis, where micro co-working like is not a thing because the unit economics don't work. But our dual revenue allow us to like of the coffee shop allow it to kind of staff the co-working space as well. So I think there's like things we do well. As far as like your question on competition, like I think that it's the current competitive environment in Fort Worth, I think I would describe as unwise and naive. And I would have been part of that. Like whenever I launched my first venture, I think I'm a little bit concerned of how little creativity there is in regards to new ventures, to think through like, how are we doing something that like distinguishes us from anything else, right? And what's cool about it is I'm really grateful for, I think there are four coffee shops on South Main. South Main's a district in the near south side that is emerging and is still needing traffic's still slow, right? Like they're still getting their footing, and four coffee shops open up. And I think that what is concerning for me is like four basically walking into each one and even ours and saying, guys, what, like, why does someone come into Craftwork over like anywhere else? Like what makes us distinctly different? I've just been asking our team, why do you think people come in? And you know, it says, oh, it's quality of product, it's hospitality, it's these things. But ultimately, like we have to do like some serious soul searching, and we have been doing it. I know like where we're headed. I'm not in this place of like, I don't know what's gonna happen. Yeah. But you cannot just open something and think like, okay, like we'll just need another bar or another cafe or another restaurant that does really something similar to what's down the street. You have to think of like what's not offered and how can we increase value to our customer over and above what's available in the competitive set. And so one book that's been really powerful for me recently is Blue Ocean Shift. It's about basically how do you get out of redwater environments where sharks are fighting over all the same fish. And create what it does. It's really interesting. It basically encourages you to vastly underperform on certain elements and vastly overperform on others. And the best example that's tangible to all of us is, I believe it's called M Hotel. And it's basically all these 3-star hotels were trying to like compete with some of these, like, how do you provide good concierge? How do you do all these things? And M Hotel was like, okay, we're going to do self-check-in, no concierge. We're going to have tiny rooms, but really comfortable beds. And started to think through, what are we going to like
be really good at
that people like, they want a clean space, a really comfy bed and sheets. And then we're going to be like really bad at big rooms and really bad at concierge, bad. Like it's just like, it's
like
different.
Costco.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Southwest is another great example of like, we're going to kill it on hospitality and like our customer. And people are like, well, is my chair 1 inch like tighter? I don't really know, but I know that customer, that flight attendant really is engaging and I like that, right? Like they can feel it. I think that's another great example. So I've been trying to dive into that to make sure we, as we grow, the reason why I say I'm grateful for all this competition is that like, I think I would have thought we were a lot more distinct than if they hadn't come in. Now it's making me force ourselves to become what we need to be. If we would have to be doing this work, you know, 3 or 4 years from now when we're in much more competitive environments. And I'm grateful we can do it now rather than building something that's...
Does that all go back to the experience and what you're building there? Or do you...
Yeah.
I'm sure you tackle it from many different directions.
Yeah.
That's got to be one of the core pieces, I would imagine.
Yeah. I think that experience is multifaceted. And so like what elements of experience do we want to zone into? And we have a few like key results for our company for this year. And one of them is, I think that what I see is that I don't know how well... you know, coffee, but you can go into any of the shops in Fort Worth and you'll have an opinion on each one of them. My guess is that your strongest opinion are going to be things that are more objective to everyone, then like you can't get alignment necessarily on like, oh, I really like a washed coffee or a natural coffee. Most people are like, I don't even know the difference between those two things. Why are you talking to me about that? I'm here for caffeine and a space to sit in and
it's right, like, not like, too loud.
Yeah, that's not. And so you start to like, I've kind of just identified over time as like, it's that Maya Angelou quote of like, people don't care what you said or did. They'll remember like the way you made them feel. Mm-hmm. And I think that like tapping it into, if you know anything about design thinking, it's all about like, you start with empathy and like, how do we start with like an empathetic disposition towards our customer and towards each other on our team to where our staff experience, our employee experience is all marked by, it seems like, again, really touchy-feely for a guy who's how do we make them feel? And how do they walk away feeling valued, cared for, seen?
What's been the biggest challenge, I guess, growing? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in Austin. There's infinite competition there. Yeah,
totally.
Fort Worth is catching up. I'd be interested what it's like growing a coffee brand. I mean, all of my experience is more business to business. So I've not ever been in or tasked with growing a brand like this.
Yeah. I mean, I think it kind of goes back to a little bit of what we're talking about before, but like, it's how do you motivate and support people? Like an operating company is like so much just people management.
Yeah.
And I think that that was probably has been the most difficult week in and week out, is it just like, how do you sustain morale whenever you're asking, we're trying to like make this impact in society and have like make people feel more connected, less isolated, all these things.
But probably like, open 7 days a week still.
Open 7 days a week. And so you're not just like kind of tiptoeing into like a little issue and trying to serve a cover. It's like, this is a epidemic in our society where like half of Americans feel lonely or isolated. And you're trying to say like, hey, yeah, let's choose to step in there. And then like through that, your employees are like getting into like engaging with people who like haven't been engaged in that way before. And so like, it just like becomes much more messy. And I think that that's like part of what is beautiful about it, but also just like emotionally exhausting. I've tried to do my best to identify gifts of our team, and especially like you need to, I'm trying to get to the point where you have a lot of like specialists in different areas on our management team where I'm able to relieve myself from positions that I'm not good at. And I think one of the most like key like hires over the last year was Catherine Morris, who is head of our HR and our people, and like that she cares. It's Jonathan Morris's wife who runs Fourth Barbershop.
Yeah, and had him on the show.
Yeah, and so Catherine's part of our team, and she's an amazing individual. But like, so many times, I'll get like very just like tense or frustrated or whatever, and a lot of it has to do with just like I feel like I'm pouring myself in. And then like the result is not like seen on the front line. So I'll be like, hey, I think I need to go into this conversation like this. And she's like, you're not going to say it that way. You're going to say it like this because I know your intent. And like, and you have essentially like this people coach in a sense, both for our team and for our stores. And I think that she's empowered our store leaders to be like much better stewards of the lives that the barista's lives. And so I just have seen, like as far as where I'm very like weak and need growth, like I'm good with like 3 to 4 relationships in my life and I have 35 of them under me, right? And so like Catherine's extended my capacity in that way.
Yeah, along the same lines, I'd be interested what it's like recruiting and kind of retaining talent in that space. Obviously, that's some of the biggest challenges you face. Mm-hmm. How do you even go about recruiting baristas and things like that?
Yeah, so like practically you need to be like always like having a funnel. So like people are able to opt in and you have a big pool of talent to pull from whenever you do need a teammate. So that's like super practical. Yeah. I didn't learn that for a long time.
Is that done typically through your newsletter?
Yeah, it's all, like basically we're always in a hiring mode to where we're just like,
gotcha.
If you have 35 people and average tenure is 8 years to 12 or 12 months to 18 months, then you're just like, you're essentially hiring, you know,
at all times
in some positions. So you just have to be open in that sense. But I think specifically on like retention, I'm in a learning, like, again, it's 2020. I'm like, literally just every granular aspect of our company I'm trying to learn from. And we have individuals who, so we had hired 6 baristas whenever we started. up until December, three of them were still with us.
That's good.
4 years in different roles in our company, not all in a barista. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's like success stories that, so we still have two of them, one just relocated to New York and one's a store leader and one's our head roaster. And so there's been like opportunities for growth and development. But then there's like, especially in the last year, I just felt like we've been missing the mark a little bit on how do we align like what kind of expectations, needs, and stage of life is. And so I think that's like one thing that I'm going to start with is just like saying like, who thrives in a barista role? Like what are the markers of this, not just this person's like mm-hmm. candidacy, but also like stage of life? Because like I have three kids, I'm in a different stage of life. I would at times like love to be on bar and as a barista, but like the service industry and like just doesn't like, it's actually
doesn't
been a,
align. Yeah.
And it's been like a really eye-opening experience of like, man, like it, service industry is tough. Like it's hard for not just operators to make money, but like for people who are serving you. And so one like just tip or encouragement I give to anyone who go there, like if you have the capacity or ability to like tip more than you feel is even comfortable, because those people are working their tail offs in ways mm-hmm. that like you don't see and just trying to get by. But I think that I really want to have someone thrive for about 18 months in our company, and that's my goal. And so how do I find some individuals at the barista level who line up with that? And so I'm kind of exploring like what are markers of that? Is it, oh, we're really good for artists because we have flexibility, or we're really good for college students because like they really are looking for something that they can be stable over the course of their time here. So just trying to identify that. And then through that, I think I'll be able to give you a better answer.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely answered it. I mean, it sounds like 2020 is a year of improvement mm-hmm. and kind of improving those processes.
Yeah.
What else is next for Crapper?
Yeah, so we have, the reason why 2020 is the year of process is we have three deals that are signed in 2021.
Okay.
One in Houston, two more in Austin. Awesome. And you may have read a little bit about this, but we've identified a little bit of how can we be the hospitality arm in the context of high-end apartment complexes mm-hmm. that are in dense environments. Fairly niche, but huge need. And it's very like strategically and missionally aligned for our company because we're majoring on hospitality. And so, and people like, you can read the stats around apartment living is kind of crazy. It used to be like unit mixes in the 80s were like a third, a third, a third, one, two, and three bedroom apartments. Mm-hmm. And now it's basically 90% of apartments are one bedroom. And
really?
It just kind of highlights the isolating nature of apartment living, right? And
yeah.
So trying to insert ourselves there and be like a part of what does it look like to serve a community that's in need of places where they can connect in physical spaces. So we're getting a lot of traction with the real estate community there. And I think that that's like really the marker of like craft for going forward is like our Austin location is a streetlights development with Graystar, and we're currently like in collaboration with them of like, how do we just continue to scale with you guys and working with some co-living providers and a handful of other developers, both regional and national. So I think that you'll see a lot of, hopefully a lot of craft works that are going in the context of multifamily.
Very good. I think Johnny here that's with us today is part of the epidemic. He is moving into a single bedroom. So if he needs some people in his life, he can go to Craftware.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, we can wrap up here with one more
cool.
question. I'd be interested to hear, you probably interview a ton of different people. Mm. What is your typical favorite interview question?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's, if you're going to start your own company, what would your three core values be?
I think okay. I've not heard that one. I like it.
Put someone on their toes, and it kind of gets to the heart of like what are they about as a yeah. person. And it's really interesting because I think they expect the what are our core values, and so it's like they're reorienting themselves of like, no, what really matters to me. And then it's cool seeing where there's alignment and where there's maybe not. So
very cool. I yeah. appreciate you doing this. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Thanks for giving the show a listen. Please do me a favor before you stop listening. Subscribe on whatever platform you're on. If you loved it,
so much and you've already subscribed, share this episode with a friend. Thanks again, and I'll see you next week.
Matt McGee is an employee of Frost Insurance. All opinions shared by Matt or guests of the Healthy Conversations podcast are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of Frost Insurance or Frost Bank. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for insurance, banking, or investment advice. Healthy Conversations with Matt McGee is brought to you by Straight Up Podcasts.